Good morning and welcome to Talking Information Center News. My name is Michelle Balcony. Today is Friday, May 29th, 2026. We'll be reading the latest headlines from Newsmax and other news wires. A report says President Trump shares a draft of the Iran peace agreement with Israel and allies. President Donald Trump has shared a draft peace agreement on Iran with Israel and other allies as part of ongoing diplomatic efforts to stabilize tensions, according to The Guardian. The draft proposal has not been finalized and remains under negotiation among the parties involved, with officials still weighing revisions and sequencing of key provisions. The Guardian has reported that circulating draft frameworks is a common diplomatic step used to test allied support and identify sticking points before the formal negotiations advance. Vice President J.D. Vance said the United States is not there yet on reaching an agreement with Iran, but added that the parties are close. Vice President Vance described negotiations as still ongoing and said remaining differences are being worked through, even as he expressed cautious optimism about the prospects for a deal. According to The Guardian, the draft framework outlines a phased approach aimed at reducing hostilities and opening broader talks between the United States, Iran, and regional stakeholders. The initial phase would reportedly focus on de-escalation, including reduced military activity alongside expanded diplomatic channels. The draft also envisions measures to restore commercial shipping through key waterways, paired with possible sanctions release tied to Iranian compliance with agreed steps. Subsequent rounds of negotiations would address Iran's nuclear program under international monitoring, though both sequencing and scope remain unresolved, The Guardian reported. The framework further calls for broader regional security talks involving multiple actors, reflecting wider concerns about spillover from the conflict. The Guardian also reported that some Israeli and regional officials have raised concerns over elements of the proposal, particularly the timing of nuclear-related commitments and phased concessions. The agreement has not been approved by either Washington nor Tehran, and diplomatic efforts involving multiple international partners remain ongoing as discussions continue. A report says Iran has launched missiles from the southern region. Iran's armed forces fired missiles at unidentified targets late Thursday, yesterday, local time, as the Trump administration weighed a tentative agreement aimed at ending the conflict with Tehran. The reported missile launch came hours after U.S. Central Command accused Iran of violating a fragile ceasefire by firing a ballistic missile toward Kuwait and launching attack drones near the Strait of Hormuz. The escalating military activity unfolded, even as the White House confirmed reports that the United States and Iran have mostly agreed to terms for a temporary diplomatic framework. The sides have been in tenuous ceasefire since April 7th. Iran's armed forces carried out a missile launch operation from the southern region of the country toward unspecified targets, and the destination of the missiles was not yet clear, The Times of Israel has reported, citing the semi-official Fars news agency. Iran's semi-official Tasnim news agency reported that sounds coming from the sea were caused by an exchange of fire intended as a warning to ships in the Strait of Hormuz, according to the Times. CENTCOM, the United States Central Command, said Thursday yesterday that Iran launched a ballistic missile toward Kuwait on Wednesday night in what it called an egregious ceasefire violation. Kuwaiti forces intercepted the missile. CENTCOM also said Iranian forces launched 5 one-way attack drones in and near the Strait of Hormuz. U.S. forces intercepted the drones and prevented the launch of a 6th drone from a control site in Bandar Abbas. A White House official confirmed an Axios report that negotiators had largely settled on a proposed 60-day memorandum of understanding that would extend the current ceasefire and launch nuclear negotiations. President Donald Trump has not yet given final approval to the agreement or the arrangement, that official said. Axios reported U.S. officials believe Iran has already signed off on the proposal, though Tehran has not publicly confirmed that claim. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said Thursday in a press conference that negotiations remained active but stressed Trump has several red lines for any agreement. The teams have been going back and forth, Bessent said during a White House press briefing. Bessent said the administration is demanding that Iran surrender its highly enriched uranium stockpile and abandon efforts to develop a nuclear weapon. He also insisted that the Strait of Hormuz must be free and open as it was before the conflict erupted. Reports of a deal lift the S&P 500 and NASDAQ to records. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ posted record closing highs Thursday yesterday after news reports said the U.S. and Iran had reached a draft agreement to extend their ceasefire for 60 days, while investors also digested key inflation data. The news was first reported by Axios, which said that negotiations on Iran's nuclear program would be held during the truce period, but that the plan still needed the approval of President Donald Trump. Traders are on a hair trigger. Traders are on a hair trigger with the back and forth on deal news and have been leaning long to avoid getting trampled by a better than expected outcome. The harder part is that the inflationary forces may not abate as fast as markets want, said Jamie Cox, managing partner at Harris Financial Group. Economic data shows U.S. inflation increased at its fastest pace in 3 years in April, driven by higher energy prices amid the Iran war. Meanwhile, U.S. GDP for the first quarter was revised lower to a 1.6% annualized increase, with momentum expected to slow this quarter. According to preliminary data, the S&P 500 gained 43.50 points, or 0.58%, to end at 7,563.71 points, while the NASDAQ composite gained 239.79 points, or 0.91%, to 26,917.47. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 24.11 points, or 0.04%, to 50,666.29. The Standard & Poor 500 Healthcare Index posted strong gains as well. Eli Lilly advanced after CVS Health said it would restore the drug maker's weight loss injection Zepbound to its coverage and add its newly approved obesity pill Foundayo. Tech shares also moved higher. Microsoft gained after news website The Information reported that the company would release a new coding model next week. Marvel Technology rose after UBS raised its target price to $230 from $195. The company's shares have more than doubled so far this year. Snowflake shares soared after the data analytics firm lifted its annual product revenue forecast and announced a 5-year AI infrastructure deal worth $6 billion with Amazon Web Services. Peers, Datadog, and MongoDB also climbed. Renewed confidence in AI and earnings growth momentum have underscored the recent rally despite the Middle East tensions, which have increased inflationary expectations. Markets continue to look through these risks because the global economy and corporate earnings remain relatively resilient, said Jitania Kandahari, Deputy CIO, Solutions and Multi-Assets at Morgan Stanley Investment Management. Geopolitical instability could ultimately accelerate spending in areas tied to AI, including cybersecurity, defense technology, energy infrastructure, and supply chain resiliency, reinforcing the long-term investment case. While S&P 500 is trading at roughly 21 to 22 times forward earnings versus a trailing 10-year average of 19.7 times, investors are less concerned because earnings expectations are rising faster than stock prices, Kandahari said. Among other movers, Dollar Tree climbed after the discount retailer lifted its full-year profit forecast, while Best Buy also rose after the electronics vendor forecast second quarter sales above estimates. Drone companies rose after the Wall Street Journal reported that the Trump administration was in talks to fund drone firms. Shares of Unusual Machines surged, as reported by Thomson Reuters. Kellogg says an Iran deal would be fraught with danger. Retired Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg warned Thursday that any potential agreement between the United States and Iran would carry significant risks, cautioning President Donald Trump against trusting Tehran's leadership amid ongoing tensions over the country's nuclear ambitions. Kellogg said Iran's ruling government has a long history of delaying negotiations and avoiding lasting concessions. He is the president of the United States, Kellogg said of Trump. He's going to make the final call. U.S. and Iranian negotiators reached a tentative agreement Thursday to extend the ceasefire in the three-month-old war by 60 days and start a new round of talks on Iran's nuclear program, according to a U.S. official familiar with the matter. Iran did not immediately confirm any deal, and the official noted that Trump has yet to sign off on it. Kellogg, who served as a national security advisor during Trump's first administration, said he remains deeply skeptical of the Iranian regime and its intentions. As long as you keep this theocratic government in charge, they're going to come back to this in a year or 2 years, he said, referring to concerns over Iran's nuclear program and regional influence. Kellogg compared Iran's negotiating strategy to the Four Corners basketball offense, once popularized by former University of North Carolina coach Dean Smith, describing it as a deliberate attempt to stall for time. Their gameplay is to delay and delay, Kellogg said. The retired three-star Army general also suggested prolonged negotiations or military tensions involving Iran could carry domestic political consequences for Republicans ahead of future elections. In the near term, I would be worried about losing Congress if this thing extends and there's no real resolution to this, he said. Kellogg acknowledged that Congress could become more involved in any potential conflict or agreement with Iran, but expressed little confidence lawmakers would provide clear direction. Quoting former President John Adams, Kellogg joked that one useless man is unfortunate, while three useless men or more is Congress. Still, Kellogg emphasized the ultimate authority rests with President Trump as commander-in-chief. I didn't get any electoral college votes, Kellogg said. We're just noise level. The comments come as the Trump administration weighs its approach toward Iran amid ongoing concerns over Tehran's uranium enrichment activities, support for proxy militant groups, and instability across the Middle East. President Trump has repeatedly signaled he prefers a negotiated solution while also warning Iran against advancing its nuclear program. Administration officials have maintained that all options remain on the table. Kellogg said he wanted to deliver what he described as a cautionary note to the president, arguing that any agreement with Iranian leaders should be approached carefully. I would caution really quite heavily the making any agreement with these guys, and it is fraught with danger, he said. Besant is cautious as questions swirl over a tentative Iran pact. Treasury Secretary Scott Besant stepped lightly around questions Thursday at a White House press briefing about a tentative agreement between the United States and Iranian negotiators, telling reporters it would be a mistake to get out ahead of the president before President Donald Trump signs off on any deal, according to The Hill. Besant, who took over the briefing after Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt repeatedly declined to confirm details of the reported memorandum of understanding, first reported by Axios and later acknowledged by White House officials, according to The Hill. The teams have been going back and forth, and President Trump has made it very clear. He talked about it at the cabinet meeting and that he has several red lines. Besant said when pressed on whether an agreement with Tehran was on the table. Besant reiterated that Trump is demanding Iran surrender its stockpile of highly enriched uranium and permanently abandon any path toward obtaining a nuclear weapon. He also said the administration continues to insist that the Strait of Hormuz remain fully open to international shipping after weeks of turmoil in the key global energy checkpoint. He is not going to take a bad deal. He's going to make a great deal for the American people, Besant said. When reporters asked again whether Washington and Tehran had reached a tentative understanding, Besant responded that everything depends on what the president wants to do. Besant also told reporters he had not spoken with Trump before taking the podium Thursday afternoon. U.S. officials confirmed earlier Thursday that negotiators from Washington and Tehran had reached a tentative 60-day memorandum of understanding. Extending the ceasefire in the Middle East and reopening the Strait of Hormuz after weeks of conflict and disruptions to commercial shipping. During the proposed 60-day negotiation period, the two sides would attempt to negotiate limits on Iran's nuclear enrichment program, the disposition of Tehran's highly enriched uranium stockpile, international inspection and verification measures, and a possible phased rollback of U.S. sanctions. Negotiators are also expected to discuss maritime security guarantees in the Strait of Hormuz, including ensuring unrestricted commercial shipping through the vital energy corridor and coordinating demining operations in the waterway. The agreement calls for Iran to refrain from imposing tolls on commercial vessels transiting the strait and begin clearing naval mines from shipping lanes that carry roughly 20% of the world's oil and gas shipments. The tentative deal still requires approval from senior Iranian leadership. If commercial shipping through the strait is fully restored, the United States would remove its naval blockade and issue sanctions waivers, allowing Iran to resume broader oil exports. Qatar's emir pushes regional diplomacy in a Trump call. Qatar's emir stressed to President Donald Trump during a phone call Thursday the need to prioritize political and diplomatic solutions to bolster regional stability. Qatar's state-run Qatar News Agency reported that President Trump called Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad al Tahini, and that the leaders reviewed political and security developments in the Middle East amid regional and international efforts to reduce tensions and improve stability. It is unclear whether the leaders discussed a possible Iran ceasefire, maritime security, or broader regional diplomacy. A call to the White House was not returned. The Guardian reported Thursday that Trump circulated a draft peace agreement related to the conflict with Iran to allies, including Israel. It is unclear whether it was shared with Qatar, which, along with Pakistan, has acted as mediator since the conflict began February 28th. During the call, the Qatari emir emphasized the importance of dialogue among all parties that contributes to regional security and stability and prevents further regional escalation, QNA reported. Trump expressed appreciation for Qatar's role in supporting Pakistani mediation and efforts in facilitating communication among various parties, the news agency reported. Trump also praised Qatar's efforts to bridge differences and support regional de-escalation tracks. The leaders also discussed strategic relations between Doha and Washington and ways to strengthen bilateral cooperation across multiple sectors in line with the country's shared interests. The U.S. warns Oman on aiding Iran's Hormuz toll plans. The United States warned Oman yesterday not to get directly or indirectly involved in any effort to impose a toll in the Strait of Hormuz, saying it will penalize any partners involved in such a system. The United States government will not tolerate any effort to impose a tolling system in the Strait of Hormuz, U.S. Secretary of the Treasury Scott Bessent said in a post on X. Oman, in particular, should know that the U.S. Treasury will aggressively target any actors involved, directly or indirectly, in facilitating tolls for the Strait, and any willing partners will be penalized, Bessent added, as reported by Thomson Reuters. Pakistan Foreign Minister to visit Washington and meet Secretary of State Rubio. Pakistani Foreign Minister Ishaq Dar will visit Washington, D.C. Friday, today, where he will meet with U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Pakistan's foreign ministry said Thursday. The visit comes as Islamabad is attempting to negotiate a peace pact to permanently end the U.S.-Israeli war with Iran. Dar will meet Rubio to review bilateral relations and exchange views on regional and global developments of mutual interest, the foreign ministry said in a statement, and reported by Thomson Reuters. Trump-Abraham Accords push baffles the Middle East. President Donald Trump's suggestion that certain Middle Eastern nations join the Abraham Accords as part of a broader agreement with Iran has baffled some officials and analysts across the region. President Trump floated the idea this week while touting ongoing negotiations aimed at ending hostilities with Iran. In a Truth Social post, the president said, countries including Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Pakistan, Turkey, Egypt, and Jordan should immediately sign the Abraham Accords as part of what he described as an historic regional settlement. But several of the nations Trump named, including Egypt, Jordan, and Turkey, already maintain diplomatic ties with Israel. Others, such as Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Pakistan, have publicly resisted normalization efforts, particularly amid lingering outrage across the Muslim world over the war in Gaza and broader tensions involving Israel. It's just bizarre, Yoel Guzansky, a senior fellow at Tel Aviv University's Institute for National Security Studies, told the New York Times. What's the connection between a deal with Iran and that? I am honestly puzzled. Still, President Trump's allies defended the proposal as part of a broader push for regional stability and economic integration. Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, praised the concept as simply brilliant, arguing that linking Iran diplomacy with an expansion of the Abraham Accords could strengthen Israel's long-term security and create new economic opportunities in the region. The Abraham Accords, brokered during Trump's first term in 2020, normalized relations between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan. Conservatives have long hailed the agreements as one of Trump's signature foreign policy achievements, especially after decades of failed Middle East peace initiatives under previous administrations. White House spokeswoman Anna Kelly defended President Trump's latest push, saying the accords have already generated massive economic benefits and historic cooperation among participating nations. Some analysts, however, believe Trump's comments were aimed more at domestic political audience than at reshaping Middle East policy. Politico reported that Gulf officials privately viewed the demand as an effort to reassure Republican Iran hawks, concerned Trump may offer too many concessions in negotiating with Tehran. Pakistan quickly rejected the proposal, Defense Minister Khawaja Muhammad Asif said during and joining the accords would conflict with Pakistan's fundamental views. Saudi Arabia also repeatedly insisted that normalization with Israel depends on meaningful progress toward Palestinian statehood. Reuters reported that public distrust of Israel remains high across much of the Muslim world, particularly following Israel's military campaign in Gaza. Despite skepticism overseas, President Trump continues to argue that broader Arab-Israeli normalization remains essential to lasting regional peace. His administration has emphasized the expanding the Abraham Accords could counter Iranian influence while deepening economic and security ties among U.S. allies. A backlash over fund test Blanche's bid for U.S. Attorney General. Todd Blanche has moved quickly as acting U.S. Attorney General to please the man whose face now adorns the exterior of the Justice Department's Washington headquarters, President Donald Trump. The Department of Justice under Blanche, who took over in April after President Trump fired his predecessor, Pam Bondi, secured criminal charges against former FBI Director James Comey, ramped up its investigation into former CIA Director John Brennan, and removed press releases about prosecutions of protesters who attacked the U.S. Capitol January 6, 2021. But his audition for the permanent job as the nation's top law enforcement official faces its biggest hurdle next week when Congress returns the $1.776 billion fund for victims of what Trump has called government weaponization, including possibly the January 6 protesters. The anti-weaponization fund, set up under a settlement of Trump's lawsuit against the Internal Revenue Service over the leak of his tax records, was widely derided by critics as a slush fund for Trump's political allies. Senators recoiled from the fund when it was rolled out last week and canceled a planned vote on funding immigration enforcement in protest. Some Republican lawmakers have discussed placing guardrails on the fund or eliminating it entirely. Blanche was summoned to a tense meeting with Senate Republicans, many of whom expressed fury about the political optics of the fund and the prospect that people convicted of violent crimes could receive taxpayer-funded payouts. The Republican senators were pissed, end quote, from Senator Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, said on his podcast. The entire meeting, they were screaming at the acting attorney general. President Trump has backed the plan, writing in a social media post that he is helping those abused by Democrat President Joe Biden's administration. Blanche, acting attorney general, has defended the fund, saying there are no partisan requirements to file a claim. A five-person commission, four of whom Blanche will appoint directly, would oversee compensation for those claiming to be victims of lawfare or weaponization, terms Trump and his allies have long used to condemn cases against them. The pushback from Senate Republicans, whose support he would need for confirmation, shows the risks of Blanche's Trump-centered approach. Courts have also voiced distrust of the DOJ in several cases. There's just a fundamental incompatibility between his, Trump's, demands that the Justice Department carry out loyally all of his retributive goals and his desire to see those things succeed in courts and before grand juries, said Peter Kessler, a former DOJ official who served as acting attorney general under Republican President George W. Bush. A department spokesperson said Blanche has strong, productive relationships with both Congress and the courts as the laws of our nation are enforced. Any notion that acting AG Blanche lacks support from these institutions is simply false, the spokesperson said. A day after the confrontation with Republican lawmakers, Blanche was rebuked by a federal judge. Tennessee-based U.S. District Judge Waverly Crenshaw dismissed a human smuggling case against Kilmar Abrego Garcia, finding the prosecution was improperly brought in retaliation for his legal challenge to his wrongful deportation in El Salvador last year. In his ruling, the judge cited Blanche's remarks in a June 2025 Fox News interview when Blanche, then the deputy attorney general, said the government began investigating Abrego after another federal judge questioned his deportation. Crenshaw, an appointee of former Democrat President Barack Obama, said Blanche's statements tied the DOJ leadership to the tainted investigation and confirm what motivated it. The Justice Department has vowed to appeal the ruling, calling it wrong and dangerous in court filings. Prosecutors have denied any political motivation. Blanche worked his way from a paralegal to a supervisor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, a magnet for top-flight federal prosecutors. He left his position at a prominent New York law firm in 2023 to represent President Trump, who at the time struggled to find lawyers to defend him against a crush of state and federal investigations. He has lived this lawfare for years. He understands the viciousness of it. He understands the dangers of it, said Mike Davis, a Trump ally and the head of the Article 3 Project, a conservative legal advocacy group who called Blanche the man for the moment. Blanche built a rapport with Trump, adopting his pugilistic style in defending against three of the four criminal cases President Trump faced in his years out of office. He was installed as second in command at the Justice Department after Trump won the 2024 election. Rebecca Ryoff, a professor at New York Law School and a legal ethics expert, said Blanche's past role as Trump's lawyer may put him in a different mindset than others who have run the DOJ. You have really one person that you're looking out for, and you grow to think of them and their goals as the be-all, end-all of your professional life, Ryoff said. Then, when you assume a position where you are supposed to be representing the public, you might have an altered view, as reported by Thomson Reuters. Pam Bondi faces House questioning on Epstein files today. Former Attorney General Pam Bondi is testifying before House lawmakers investigating Jeffrey Epstein's sexual abuse cases, a long-awaited appearance that brings renewed scrutiny of the administration's handling of the Epstein case files. Bondi was defiant in previous public testimony when she was confronted by lawmakers about the Epstein investigation. It is unclear whether she will bring the same approach Friday now that she is no longer in charge of the Justice Department. The session will be held behind closed doors. The transcribed interview will give lawmakers a chance to dig for information on the Trump administration's handling of the Epstein files and other related matters, including the prison sentence of his former girlfriend and confidant, Ghislaine Maxwell. The Justice Department moved Maxwell to a prison camp in Texas late August. I think she absolutely could clear up any missing pieces if she wanted to, said Representative Yasmin Ansari, an Arizona Democrat, on the House Oversight Committee. Now it is a question of whether or not she is willing to be transparent. Lawmakers are trying to find out what decisions prosecutors have made about investigating Epstein associates, how the Justice Department handled the congressional mandate to release the Epstein case files, and whether President Donald Trump was involved in that process. Bondi, who revealed this week that she is being treated for thyroid cancer, has stayed with Trump's orbit even after being ousted from her job in early April of this year. President Trump appointed Bondi to a White House panel on artificial intelligence this week, and Bondi will be accompanied Friday by Justice Department officials, including Harmeet Dhillon, who heads the department's Civil Rights Division, acting as her counsel. Democrats say that arrangement is a conflict of interest. A spokesperson for the Justice Department said, the officials were there to help lawmakers understand the department's process for releasing the case files. Bondi has been central to the political firestorm over Epstein, initially raising expectations for the full release of what is known as the Epstein files, only to later backtrack. That reversal prompted Congress to step in and pass a law requiring the release. Bondi faced even more backlash when the Justice Department's release of the files was delayed and then included personal information of several potential victims. She has insisted in congressional hearings that she was trying to follow the law. The House Oversight Committee, meanwhile, has been conducting a wide-ranging investigation into Epstein that spans multiple presidential administrations. Bondi was subpoenaed by the committee in March in a bipartisan vote, but she tried to head off that demand by holding a closed-door meeting with lawmakers that same month. The maneuver only added to the enmity between Bondi and Democrats on the committee. Bondi's departure from the Justice Department also raised doubts about the enforcement of the congressional subpoena after the committee's Democrats maneuvered to press for a civil contempt of Congress resolution against Bondi. She agreed to sit for a transcribed interview rather than a sworn deposition. Democrats on the oversight panel have criticized that arrangement, saying it allows Bondi to decline to answer questions. They have also pressed the Republican chair of the committee, Representative James Comer, to record the interview on video. A failure to film and release a video of Ms. Bondi's testimony would present a grave injustice to the American people and survivors of Epstein's crimes, the committee's top Democrat, Representative Robert Garcia, wrote in a letter to Comer. Representative Comer has said he is allowing Bondi to sit for a transcribed interview rather than a deposition as an incentive to cooperate. Previously, he had enforced a subpoena on former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton after they resisted the demand. Both of their depositions were recorded on video. Still, Comer said Bondi could face prosecution if she lies to Congress. He said the committee would also release a transcript of the interview. Hopefully that will be good enough, Representative Comer said, as reported by the Associated Press. Besant rips Governor Newsom's plan to tax the Trump fund and calls it stupid. Treasury Secretary Scott Besant yesterday, sharply criticized California Governor Gavin Newsom's proposed tax on a federal compensation fund for victims of government weaponization, dismissing the plan with a blunt rebuke. There is no cure for stupid, Besant said at a White House briefing when asked about Newsom's proposal to tax President Donald Trump's $1.766 billion fund. The fund is intended to compensate people the Trump administration says were harmed by the political weaponization of federal agencies. Trump and his allies have repeatedly accused the federal government under previous administrations of targeting conservatives, political opponents, and other Americans through investigations, prosecutions, and regulatory actions. Newsom's proposal would seek to tax payments made from the fund to California residents, setting up a potential clash between the Democrat governor and the Trump administration over whether such compensation should be treated as taxable income. Besant's comment reflects the administration's opposition to any state-level effort to claim a portion of the payments. Newsom, a frequent critic of Trump, has positioned California as a leading counterweight to the administration's agenda. The governor has clashed with Trump over immigration, climate policy, federal fund, and law enforcement priorities. The proposed tax could intensify these disputes, particularly if California moves to collect revenue from residents receiving federal compensation. The dispute comes as Trump continues to make claims of government weaponization a central theme of his second term. The administration has said the compensation fund is part of an effort to address abuses by federal agencies and restore public trust. It remains unclear how many people would be eligible for payments from the fund or how the administration would determine compensation amounts. The United States to dub two Brazilian gangs as terrorist organizations, according to Secretary of State Rubio. The United States intends to designate Brazilian gangs PCC and Comando Vermelho as foreign terrorist organizations from June 5th, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Thursday of this week. The Lula administration in Brazil has tried to avoid such designations because it could open a path for military action by the U.S. in Brazil, or sanctions against banks that unknowingly do business with gang members. While the FTO designation was planned to take effect in June, the U.S. Department of State designated the gangs as specially designated global terrorists Thursday, Rubio said in a statement. Rubio said the gangs were two of the most violent criminal organizations in Brazil and their influence and networks extend across the region and into the United States. The Trump administration will continue to use all available tools to protect our nation and our national security interest by keeping illicit drugs off of our streets and disrupting the revenue streams funding violent narco-terrorists, Rubio said, as reported by Thomson Reuters. President Trump's $250 bill faces legal questions. The Treasury Department, office responsible for printing the nation's money, is conducting appropriate planning and due diligence in response to proposed legislation that would allow President Donald Trump to appear on a $250 bill. Trump administration officials have been pushing the Bureau of Engraving and Printing to prepare prototype designs for a commemorative $250 bill note featuring the president's portrait, a move that would mark the first appearance of a living person on U.S. paper currency in more than 150 years, The Washington Post reported Thursday. The proposal is tied to upcoming celebrations marking America's 250th anniversary in July and reflects President Trump's broader effort to leave a lasting imprint on U.S. institutions and patriotic commemorations. The report said U.S. Treasurer Brandon Beach and Senior Advisor Mike Brown repeatedly encouraged Bureau staff to move forward with mock-up designs despite longstanding federal laws prohibiting living individuals from appearing on American currency. One proposed design reviewed by the Post reportedly places President Trump's portrait prominently in the center of the bill, flanked by the signatures of Trump and Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. British artist Ian Alexander, who said he created the mock-up after discussions with President Trump, told the paper the president personally approved modifications to the design, including patriotic red, white, and blue accents and logo honoring America's semi-quintessential celebration. He absolutely loved it, Alexander said of Trump's reaction. Current federal law presents significant hurdles. The 1866 Thayer Amendment bars living people from appearing on U.S. paper currency after a Treasury official famously placed his own image on a banknote during the Civil War era. The restriction grew partly out of America's rejection of monarch-style traditions common in Europe, where reigning kings and queens routinely appeared on currency. Still, Congress could override the restrictions through legislation. Representative Joe Wilson, a Republican from South Carolina, introduced a bill earlier this year directing the Treasury Department to create a $250 Federal Reserve note featuring Trump's image, though the measure has not yet advanced. Treasury officials emphasized no bill would be printed unless Congress formally authorizes it. Should this legislative mandate be signed into law, the BEP is moving proactively to produce a $250 commemorative note, which will appropriately recognize the 250th anniversary of our great nation, a Treasury spokesperson said. The proposal comes as the Trump administration also prepares to issue U.S. currency bearing Trump's signature for the first time. In March of this year, the New York Times reported Trump's signature would appear on U.S. paper money later this year alongside Bessent's name. Supporters argue the effort appropriately honors Trump's role in what allies call America's golden age economic revival, while critics claim the move risks politicizing national symbols. Currency experts caution the process could take years because of security requirements, Federal Reserve coordination, and ATM compatibility testing. Still, administration officials appear eager to move forward as preparations intensify for the nation's 250th anniversary celebration. The Postal Service strikes a multi-year deal with DHL. The United States Postal Service said yesterday, it had reached a multi-year deal with DHL e-commerce for last mile parcel delivery services in the United States, expected to be worth more than $10 billion. The DHL e-commerce, which is part of German logistics giant DHL Group, said the deal will help it grow in the U.S. market over the next several years. Postmaster General David Steiner said in an interview that no one else delivers to 170 million U.S. households 6 days a week and gives DHL the opportunity to play in the largest market in the world. He said DHL either had to invest a ton of capital to build out an end-to-end network, or they needed to partner with someone that has the last mile capability like the United States Postal Service. DHL e-commerce handles pickups and sortation across its 19 U.S. hubs before USPS will complete the final mile for all deliveries. DHL e-commerce America's CEO Scott Ashbaugh said the deal would help the company grow in the United States and target slightly heavier parcels. He said the company could add more U.S. hubs. "We expect to roughly double our business by the 2030 horizon," Ashbaugh said. The deal is critical to the financially strapped USPS, which has warned it could run out of cash as soon as February. Last month, Amazon.com said it had reached a new agreement with the U.S. Postal Service on package deliveries, as reported by Thomson Reuters. Politico says the Pentagon is ready to attack Cuba. The Pentagon has spent months positioning warships, aircraft, and Marines around the Caribbean as the Trump administration weighs possible military action against Cuba. The move escalated a broader effort by President Donald Trump to reshape the balance of power across the Western Hemisphere. According to a Politico report, the administration believes economic sanctions and political pressure have failed to destabilize Cuba's communist government, prompting discussions of military options ranging from targeted strikes to an operation aimed at removing Havana's leadership. The buildup follows two major regional actions by the administration earlier this year: the January capture of former Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, and the U.S. retaking control of the Panama Canal, both of which Trump allies have framed as part of a wider campaign to reassert American dominance in the hemisphere. "Cuba is in a lot of trouble," Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Wednesday of this week during a cabinet meeting. "Having a failed state 90 miles from our shores is a threat to the national security of the United States," he said. Politico reported that the USS Nimitz Carrier Strike Group entered the Caribbean in May alongside guided missile destroyers and cruisers capable of launching precision strikes ashore. Surveillance drones and reconnaissance aircraft have reportedly operated around Cuba for months, while the USS Kearsarge Amphibious Ready Group, carrying roughly 2,500 Marines, remains positioned for possible deployment. The Nimitz is likely there primarily for intimidation, though it could be used in a military operation if needed, Mark Kensian, a former Pentagon official now with the Center for Strategic and International Studies, told Politico. Kensian added that airstrikes are possible to take out their air defenses to allow broader air operations or perhaps destroy their leadership, with the idea of establishing a relationship as we have with Venezuela. Raul Castro would be their first target. The report noted that the naval buildup has strained crews and equipment after months of extended deployments tied to operations in Venezuela, the Caribbean, and the Middle East. These back-to-back long deployments will add up over time, one defense official told the outlet. Keeping them out there so long creates more problems in the long run when it comes to refitting and repairing those ships once they come home. Retired Marine Officer Joe Plensler also warned about the toll on service members and families. You do not sign up for an easy time. You know any deployment is going to be uncertain, he said. That's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening to Talking Information Center News. This has been Michelle Balcony reading the latest headlines from Newsmax and other related wire services. Today is Friday, May 29th, 2026. Thank you and make it a great day. You may also look for us, like us, and share us on social media at TIC Network on Facebook, Instagram, and X.